Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Dear viewers, this is the third episode of the 16th topic that began two sessions ago. If you recall, we have been discussing the insertions of diacritics and vowel sounds on the earliest Masahif, and we had discussed the traditional account, the way it has been presented on in our books, and we had critically analyzed the first phase of vocalization in the last session. And today, we shall critically evaluate the second phase, which is the diacritic phase. As far as this phase is concerned, you would recall that we had discussed in the very first lecture the various books which describe the insertion of diacritics. And the first question which arises in my mind regarding this is that the ascription of this diacritic phase to Nasr ibn Asim al-Laysi, the famous grammarian and scholar of Arabic, is extremely suspect. Now, the reason for this is that the text of Hamza ibn al-Hasan al-Asbahani, which is the first text to mention the fact that it was because of a lack of diacritics that tashif or misreading of the Masahif had arisen. He does not even mention the name of Nasr ibn Asim. And the second text, which is of Abu Ahmad al-Askari, which is second in chronological order, he does mention the name of Nasr, but in a very indirect way. Thus the words are yuqal, which means it is said. So it is not said with any certainty that Nasr was the person who did this. The even more important of the in this regard is the point that the students of Nasr ibn Asim ibn Laysi who have been recorded in history, they do not transmit any such endeavor on the part of Nasr ibn Asim. Thus, Al-Mizzi has recorded the following names of his students is Bishr ibn Ubaid, Abu Shasha, Jabir ibn Zayd, Humaid ibn Halal, Imran ibn Huzair, Qatada ibn Di'ama, Malik ibn Dinar, Abu Sa'd Sayyid ibn al-Mirzaban, al-Baqal, and Abu Salama. So all these students are people who have been recorded by Mizzi in his Tahzib al-Kamal, but unfortunately none of them have transmitted any account in this regard regarding their teachers and feat or endeavor or contribution in the insertion of diacritics in the Masahif. Now, the first person to say that Nasr ibn Asim was the first to put the nukat on the Masahif is Abu Hatim al-Sajistani, as recorded by Dani. Now, he is the first person. And we know that Abu Hatim al-Sajistani died in 250 Hijrah. So, it is almost two centuries after had passed that the primacy is ascribed to him, to Nasr ibn Asim. And as I have already pointed out earlier, that none of Asim's students or immediate generations have reported this fact. And it can be safely said that in the first six generations, or six centuries actually, not generations, Dani is the only person to ascribe Nukut to Nasr. And this primacy of Nukut ascribed to Dani is even further challenged if I may present to you the details of some of the other biographical books of these early period, which mention the biographical accounts of Nasr ibn Asim, but do not mention that he did anything vis-a-vis inserting the Nukut or the diacritics in the Mus'haf. Thus, for example, we have As-Sayrafi's Akhbarun Nahviyin wal-Basriyin. As-Sayrafi records in the authority of Khalid ibn al-Hazza that Asim was the first to formulate the principles of Arabic. This is what he has said. Then we have Tabqatun Nahviyin wal-Lughviyin of Az-Zubaydi. Now, Az-Zubaydi too records on the authority of Khalid ibn al-Hazza that Nasr ibn Asim was the first to formulate the principles of Arabic language. The third book of importance in this regard, viewers, is Nuzhatul Alibba, and this is by Abul Barkat ibn al-Anbari. Now, Abul Barkat records that Nasr ibn Asim is a jurist, a scholar of Arabic, and a teacher of grammar and qiraat. So, but again, he does not mention that he had any role in the insertion of the Nukat. Then, in the fourth place, viewers, we have Imba'ur Ruwat by Al-Kifti. And Al-Kifti mentioned that Nasr is among the earliest scholars of Arabic grammar, and he is a jurist. He also records the report from Khalid al-Hazza that Nasr ibn Asim was the first to formulate Arabic. The fifth person, the fifth book in this regard, viewers, is Mujmul Udubah by Yaqut al-Hamawi. And among some of the other minor details, Yaqut records Nasr was a jurist, a scholar of Arabic, and acquired the Quran in Nahf from Abu al-Aswad. So he is even more explicit in mentioning the fact that he was the person, he was one of the students of Abu al-Aswad al-Duwali. And he also records that he had the same views as the Kharijites as him, but later abandoned them, and that he died in 89 Hijra. The sixth book of views in this regard is Tahzibul Kamal by Hafiz al-Mizzi. In this regard, Mizzi cites the opinion of Khalil ibn al-Khayyat that Nasr belonged to the second tabaqa of the reciters of Basra, and that as per an opinion, he was the first to institute Nahv. And this has been, as he has been clearly said. And he records that as per an unspecified opinion, Nasr was the first to speak about Arabic grammar. So this is also what is recorded. The seventh book of importance in this regard, viewers, is of Safadi, and his Al-Wafi bil-Wafayat is the book in question. So Safadi records that almost same information as that of Yaqut al-Hamawi, and adds the, in the opinion of Abu Dawud al-Sajistani, that he was the first to formulate Nahv. It may be interesting to note here that As-Safadi in his biographical note on Hajjaj ibn Yusuf refers to Abu Ahmad al-Askari's text as per which, according to one opinion, Nasr was called upon by Hajjaj to put Nukut on the Messiah. But as I said, again, that has its own weaknesses. The eighth book viewers in this regard is Tehzib of Ibn Hajar. Ibn Hajar cites the opinion of Khalil ibn al-Khayyat that Nasr belonged to the second tabqa of the reciters of Basra. Then we have Bughiyat ul-Wa'at by As-Suyuti. So As-Suyuti explicitly merely records the opinion of Yaqut al-Hamawi cited above. So they have merely started to repeat what Yaqut has already said earlier on in Mujam al-Udaba. So we also need to understand that the books which have been referred to above do not record any primacy of Nukat to him. So these books do not even say that he was the first person to put Nukat. They do not even mention that Nasr had any role in this manner. That is obvious. And this is quite strange because these biographical works on his personality have done nothing, have recorded nothing about this alleged endeavor. We can see clearly that the common information which these books divulge to us is that he was a person who was the formulator of Arabic Nahav. He was a jurist, he was a reciter, he was a person known in these fields. But unfortunately, there's absolutely no information in these books which say that Nasr had any role in the insertion of diacritics. And I've already pointed out earlier on that his students also do not record any such endeavor from him, neither do the students of his students as well. Now, the second question, viewers, which arises in my mind is regarding Yahya ibn Ya'mar's role in this whole exercise. So the first explicit ascription of Yahya ibn Ya'mar to the insertion of diacritical docks to distinguish letters is also suspect. And the reason for this is that the first person to mention this is Ibn Athiyah. And if you recall, I had already discussed his text earlier on with you, but let me just read it again for you. And it says, وَأَمَّا شَكْلُ الْمُصَّفَ نَقْتُهُ فَرُوِيَ أَنَّ عَبْدِ الْمَلِكِ ابْنِ مَرْوَانِ أَمَرَ بِهِ وَعَمَلَهُ فَتَجَرَّدَ لِذَلِكَ الْحَجَّاجِ بِوَاسِدْ وَجِدَّ فِيهِ وَزَادَ تَحْزِيبَهُ وَأَمَرَ وَهُوَ وَالِ الْعِرَاقِ الْحَسَنِ وَيَحْيَى يَبْنِ يَعْمَرِ بِذَلِكَ. So it says that as far as the shakl and nukat of the Masahif are concerned, it is reported that Abdul Malik ordered for it and had it done. He specifically deputed Al-Hajjaj for this task in the city of Wasit. Al-Hajjaj expended his effort in this task and also added divisions to the Mus'haf. It was while he was the governor of Iraq that he ordered Al-Hasan al-Basri and now Yahya ibn Ya'mar. So his name appears now that he actually ordered Hasan al-Basri and Yahya ibn Ya'mar to undertake this task. So, viewers, in other words, it was almost 5 centuries after the death of Yahya that someone has explicitly taken his name and ascribed his endeavor to him. Now, moreover, this report in, itself suffers from the flaws that it contradicts other reports which say that Nukat and Shakl were carried out by different personalities. It is linguistically not possible to ascribe the same meaning to both these words. So when it is said, وَأَمَّا شَكْلْ وَنُقَتْ, the way it is mentioned here, it clearly refers to 2 different things. And linguistically, it is not possible to ascribe both, it's the same meaning to both these words. This is something of very important consideration. Now, as far as the report that Yahya was the first to put Nukat on the Mus'haf is concerned, its earliest inscription is to Harun ibn Musa, and about him it is known that he died before 200 Hijra. However, none of Yahya ibn Ya'mar's students report this endeavor from him. Again, the same situation we can see in this case as well. Just as we do not find Nasr ibn Asim's students relating anything from him, on a similar note, we do not find Yahya ibn Ya'mar's students doing this. Now, again, Al-Mizzi has recorded the names of his students, and they are Al-Azraq ibn al-Qais, Ishaq ibn al-Suwayd, Abu Sa'id Sabit, Habib ibn Atta, Ar-Rukain ibn Rabi', Sulaiman ibn Buraida, Sulaiman al-Taymi, Abdullah ibn Buraida, Abdullah ibn Qutbah, Abdullah ibn Khulayb, Abu Munib, Ubaidullah ibn Abdullah, Atta al-Khurasani, Ikrama Mawla ibn Abbas, Umar ibn Atta ibn Abi Khawar, ibn Abi Khawar, Qatada ibn Di'ama, and Yahya ibn Abi Ishaq al-Hadrami. Now, even the primacy ascribed to Yahya ibn Yahya by Harun ibn Musa is weakened due to the fact that many books which mention biographical notes on Yahya ibn Ya'mar are devoid of ascribing this accomplishment to him. So the point that is being made is that there are some books which do say that he was the first person to put nukat on the Masahif. But again, not only his students do not report this fact, but also there are other books which do not report anything vis-a-vis this endeavor, just as was the case with Nasr ibn Asim. So again, I'm going to refer to some of the books and some of the important earlier works of Muslims which describe the personality of Yahya ibn Ya'mar and his contribution. But lo and behold, they have no information vis-a-vis his endeavor in putting the nukat. First view is Tabqat ibn Sa'd, of Tabqat al-Kubra of Ibn Sa'd. So Ibn Sa'd records that Yahya was a grammarian and a scholar of Arabic and the Quran. So that is all he says. Then comes Maratib al-Nahviyin by Abu Tayyib Abdul Wahid. So Abu Tayyib records the statement of Qatada that the first person to formulate the rules of Arabic grammar after Abu al-Aswad was Yahya ibn Ya'mar. The third book views in this regard is Mashahiru Ulama al-Imsar by Ibn Habban. So Ibn Habban says that Yahya was a Qazi of Marv and from among the most eloquent people of his times, a very profound scholar of Arabic and a very pious person. So he records in more detail some of the facets of his personality. But again, there is no mention of the fact that he had anything to do with the insertion of the nukat. Then in the fourth place, we have Akhbar al-Nahviyin al-Basriyin of As-Sayrafi. As-Sayrafi records that Yahya added chapters to the book of Arabic grammar formulated by Abu al-Aswad, his, of course, who was his teacher. He also records a dialogue of his with al-Hajjaj involving lahan or mistakes in reading the text. Then in the fourth place, in the fifth place, viewers, we have Tabqat al-Nahviyin wal-Lughiyin by Az-Zubaydi. And Az-Zubaydi records that Yahya learned Arabic grammar from Abu al-Aswad. He also records on the authority of Khalil al-Hazza that Ibn Sirin had a Mankut Musaf on which Nukat were actually inserted by Yahya. Then in the sixth place, we have Nuzatul al-Alibba of Abu al-Barakat ibn al-Ambari. So Abu al-Barakat records that Yahya was a scholar of Arabic and Hadith and would use a lot of gharib words in his works. So he was famous for using gharib words in his works. He also records a dialogue with al-Hajjaj involving Lahan, the way I've just reported earlier on. And then viewers, in the seventh place we have al-Muntazim of Ibn al-Jawzi. Ibn al-Jawzi records that Yahya was a scholar of Arabic and the Quran. Then in the next place, in the eighth book is Imba'ur Rawat by Al-Kifti. And again, here we say that Al-Kifti records that some of the details which have already been alluded to. He mentioned that he was one of the Qurra of Basra, he was a Qazi of Marv, and was a scholar of the Quran, Arabic grammar, and the dialects of Arabic language. So he was even more proficient. He had an argument with Al-Hajjaj regarding the issue of Lahan, which again has been referred to earlier. In the ninth place, viewers, we have Mujab al-Udaba by Yaqut al-Hamawi. Yaqut mentioned that Yahya was a scholar of Qiraat, Hadith, Fiqh, Arabic, and dialects of Arabia. So again, this is something we find that in spite of this information, which is copious and is regarding his personality, there is no mention of his endeavor vis-a-vis the Nukt on the Musaf. In the tenth place, we have Wafayatul Ayan by Ibn Khaliqan. Ibn Khaliqan mentioned that Yahya was a scholar of Arabic, of the Quran, Arabic grammar, and the dialects of Arabia, and that he had learned Arabic grammar from Abu al-Aswad, And again, he has also recorded his famous dialogue with Hajjaj regarding Lahan. And then, because in the 11th place, we have Bughya ul-Wa'at by As-Suyuti. And As-Suyuti recorded, Yahya learned Arabic grammar from Abul Aswad and was appointed to the Qazi of Khorasan by Qutayba ibn Muslim. So these are the 11 works viewers, which you can see right from the earlier to Bughya ul-Wa'at of Suyuti, who actually died in 911 Hijrah, so in the 9th century. So all these works are absolutely devoid of any mention. Now, the important point of note is that not only do the above books not record any primacy of Nukut about him, they do not even mention that Yahya had any role. So what to speak of saying that he was the first person, they do not even ascribe anything vis-a-vis Nukut regarding him. And we also find that they do not even mention that Yahya had any role in certain Nukut on the Masaif, or that Yahya was summoned by Al-Hajjaj for this purpose, even though, as referred to earlier, some of them record a dialogue between Yahya and Hajjaj. So although there is a dialogue which is recorded by some of our books earlier on between Yahya and Hajjaj ibn Yusuf, but we do not find that Hajjaj had actually summoned Yahya for this purpose. So viewers, this is something very strange and that needs to be noted, and it should be it's a very strong point of critique in my regard, although it's an argument from silence, that is a famous argument from silence, but again, where silence should not have been the case, the argument becomes very important, that why is it that these works of all these centuries, which span almost 6 centuries, starting from the 3rd to the 9th, they do not mention any such detail regarding Yahya ibn Ya'mar. Now, here's the third point of critique in this regard, in my mind, is that Ibn Atiyah al-Qurtubi, Ibn al-Jazzi, Ibn Kasir mentioned that Hajjaj had deputed al-Hasan al-Basri as well, as you can see, for putting Nukut or inserting Nukut on the Masaif together with Yahya ibn Ya'mar. So we have the introduction of this third personality. We had Nasr earlier on, then we had Yahya, and we now see that there are books, and I've already cited some of them earlier, that they say that Yahya ibn Ya'mar, that Hasan al-Basri was actually summoned by Hajjaj so that he could also play his role in the insertion of the Nukut. Now, viewers, again, I'm going to burden you with the mention of certain books which mention biographical accounts of Hasan al-Basri, but they do not mention that he had any role in putting the Nukut on the Masaif. So this is something which is very, very important. First of all, viewers, we find At-Tabqat of Ibn Sa'd, which is devoid of any mention. Then we have Tariq al-Kabir by Al-Bukhari, again, which is devoid of any mention. And then in the third place, we have Tariq Wasit by Aslam ibn Sahl al-Wasiti, which also does not contain any fact that Hasan Basri had any role. And moreover, viewers, this is in spite of the glaring fact that it was in the city of Wasit that Abdul Malik is alleged to have deputed Al-Hajjaj for this task. And Al-Hajjaj had called upon Yahya ibn Ya'mar and Hasan al-Basri to carry out this task. If you remember the famous text by David had read out earlier, ascribed to Ibn Atiyah, that it was in the city of Wasit that Hajjaj had actually summoned Hasan al-Basri and Yahya ibn Ya'mar. But in the history of Wasit, the Tariq of Wasit, which is written by Aslam ibn Sahl al-Wasiti, we do not find any mention. The fourth place, viewers, we have Al-Ma'arif of Ibn Qutayba. Again, devoid of mention. The fifth book is Al-Ma'arif of Al-Tariq of Al-Fasawi. In the sixth place, we have Akhbar al-Quzat by Muhammad ibn Khalaf ibn Hayyan. In the seventh, we have Al-Muntazam by Ibn al-Jawzi. In the eighth place, we have Wafayat al-Ayan of Ibn Khalikhan. And then in the ninth place, we have Tazib al-Kamal of Hafiz Mizzi. Tenthly, we have Siru al-Alam al-Nubala of Hafiz Zahabi and Al-Wafi bil-Wafayat of Safadi. So all these books, do not mention the fact that Hasan al-Basri had any role in the insertion of Nukut. And viewers, it may be further noted with interest that contradictory reports ascribe to Hasan. There are some contradictory reports. Now, some say that Hasan approved of putting Nukut on the Masaif. And some others say that he did not even approve of putting Nukut on the Masaif. And for these reports, we can just look up Al-Muhkam of Ad-Dani. So he has actually recorded these conflicting reports, that on the one hand, he liked the fact that Nukut be put on the Musaf, and on the other hand, other reports report the absolute opposite. Now, viewers, we come to the fourth point of critique in this regard. Now, Hamza ibn al-Hasan al-Asbahani and Abu Ahmad al-Askari, who are the earliest to record that the diacritics phase was actually the phase in which Hajjaj ibn Yusuf had summoned either of these personalities or all three of them, Nasr ibn Asim, Yahya ibn Ya'mar, or Hasan al-Basri, for the insertion of Masahif, for the insertion of diacritics so that remedial measures could be taken for the misreading of the Masahif. And now, similarly, we find Ibn Atiyah al-Qurtubi, Ibn al-Jazzi Kalbi, and Ibn Kasir also mentioned that Hajjaj was deputed for this task, and they further mentioned that actually Abdul Malik ibn Marwan, the then caliph of the Muslims, had deputed him for this purpose. So, on the one hand, we have this report that Hajjaj had had this involvement because he was the person who actually summoned the personalities of Yahya, Nasr, and Hasan ibn Basri, either or all of them. And then we have Abdul Malik ibn Marwan also featuring in these books because he was the person who had asked Hajjaj to carry out this task. So this is how it has been reported in history. Now, it is known that both Hajjaj ibn Yusuf and Abdul Malik ibn Marwan are two extremely prominent personalities of the Umayyad Caliphate. Their achievements, their feats have been recorded in detail by historians. But again, viewers, we have to invoke the famous argument from silence that again, there are many books, or there are very famous books which I am going to now read out before you, that they do not mention or ascribe any such information to Hajjaj or to Abdul Malik ibn Marwan, either of them, that they had any role in this insertion. So first of all, let me look at the books which speak of Abdul Malik ibn Marwan. Now, At-Tabqat of Ibn Sa'd. So Ibn Sa'd elaborately covers all the details and important events of Abdul Malik ibn Marwan's rule, but does not mention that he had summoned Hajjaj ibn Yusuf for this purpose. Then we have Tariq al-Kabir by Imam Bukhari. He gives a short biographical account of Abdul Malik ibn Marwan, but does not mention again that he had any role in this regard. Then in the third place, we have Tariq Wasit by Aslam ibn Sahl al-Wasiti. Now, it is known again that it was in the city of Wasit that this all had taken place because Hajjaj had summoned his lieutenants for this purpose, but this book is again devoid of this mention. Then in the fourth place, viewers, we have Al-Ma'arif of Ibn Qutayba. And Ma'arif gives a short biographical entry on Abdul Malik ibn Marwan, but again, this does not contain the required information that we would expect it to contain. The fifth place, we have the Tariq of Al-Yaqubi. And Yaqubi gives a detailed treatment of the rule of Abdul Malik ibn Marwan, but again, he has no mention of the fact. He does not mention that he had anything to do with Nuqat. Then in the sixth place, viewers, we have Al-Iqt al-Farid by Ibn Abd al-Rabbi. And regarding this book, we find that there is a detailed account of Abdul Malik ibn Marwan. So Ibn Abd al-Rabbi has given a very comprehensive treatment of his rule. But again, there is no mention of the fact that Abdul Malik ibn Marwan had anything to do in summoning Hajjaj ibn Yusuf for this purpose. In the seventh place, we have a book like Kitab al-Wuzara wal-Kuttab al-Jahshiyari. Al-Jahshiyari gives a detailed treatment of the scribes, actually, who wrote for Abdul Malik ibn Marwan. Now, if he had any role in inserting the Nukat, it should have found mention here, because this was the most appropriate place. Because, you see, what is being done here is that Al-Jahshiyari is giving a detailed treatment. He is describing scribes who had actually written for Abdul Malik ibn Marwan. But again, we do not find any such detail here. In the eighth place, viewers, we have Al-Badw al-Tariq of Al-Maqdisi. And Al-Maqdisi gives a detailed treatment of the rule of Abdul Malik ibn Marwan, as is the case with the earlier historian books. But again, we find no such mention. Then in the ninth place, we have Tariq Baghdad of Khatib Baghdadi. And he also gives a reasonably detailed account of the rule of Abdul Malik Abdul Marwan, but again, we do not find any such mention. In the 10th place, we have yours, Tariq Madina Dimashq of Ibn As-Sakir. And Ibn As-Sakir gives an extremely detailed account of Abdul Malik Abdul Marwan's rule. As we know, is just generally the case that Tariq Madina Dimashq is a compendium of Muslim history. And it has, especially in the case of Abdul Malik ibn Marwan, a very detailed treatment has been given, but again, no mention of the fact that he had any role in this regard. Then we have in the 11th place Al-Muntazim of Ibn al-Jawzi. And as far as Ibn al-Jawzi is concerned, it can be perhaps said that he has given the most extensive account regarding the rule of Abdul Malik ibn Marwan. But again, nothing is found in this regard. And if I may add that this treatment or this whole depiction of his rule or his details, they actually span over 200 pages of Ibn al-Jawzi's book. Over 200 pages. And one would have expected if, in the presence of many small and minute details that he mentioned, that had Abdul Malik bin Abu Rahman any role in this insertion, then it should have found mention in this book. In the 12th place, viewers, we have Tazibul Kamal by Hafiz Mizzi. And Hafiz Mizzi, in his biographical note on Abdul Malik ibn Marwan, also does not mention any such detail. And then we have Siro Alamin Nubala in the 13th place by Zahabi. And as far as Siro is concerned, again, we have a very reasonably detailed account of the personality of Abdul Malik ibn Marwan, but again, nothing of regarding his role in the insertion of the Nukat. In the 14th place, viewers, we have Al-Wafi bil Wafayat of Safadi. And here again, we find that there is no mention that we should have, or we what we was expecting should have been there. In the 15th place, we have Al-Bidayah wa Nihaya of Ibn Kasir. Again, we have a very reasonably detailed account regarding his personality and his rule, but again, we do not find any such mention. And then, viewers, in the 16th place, we have Tehzeeb al-Tehzeeb of Hafiz ibn Hajar, who gives a biographical note on Abdul Malik al-Marwan, but does not mention any such thing. If you recall earlier on that in this point of critique, we also said that Hajjaj ibn Yusuf was the person who was summoned by Abdul Malik al-Marwan. So now, let us concentrate on the personality of Hajjaj ibn Yusuf and see how our history books describe him or the way he has conducted this whole matter. Now, first of all, viewers, I'm going to cite the Tariq Wasit by Aslam ibn Sahal al-Wasiti. And as I have already pointed out earlier on, that it has been written elsewhere that it was in the city of Wasit, of whose history this book is all about, that Hajjaj had summoned Yahya and Hassan al-Basri for this purpose, but it does not mention. So Hajjaj ibn Yusuf has not been mentioned in this particular history book that he had any role to play. The second book in this regard is Al-Ma'rif of Ibn Qutayba. And Al-Ma'rif gives a short biographical entry, it's not that detailed, but again, it does not contain any such mention. Now, the third book to be cited in this regard is Kitab al-Wuzara, Wal-Kuttab, which is by Al-Jahshiyari, already referred to above. And if you remember that I had said that Jahshiyari gives a detailed account of all in previously we had find that studied about the scribes who had written for Abdul Malik ibn Marwan. But in this case, when he discusses Hajjaj, Jahshiyari gives a detailed account of how Al-Hajjaj converted the official records of Kufa, Basra, and Syria from Persian and Roman into Arabic. So he gives these details. Now, if a Hajjaj had anything to do with the Masahif, then obviously it should have found mention in Al-Jashyari's work, because he's given this detailed mention that he was the person of responsible for converting the official records into Arabic. In the fourth place, viewers, we have Al-Bad wa Tariq of Al-Maqdisi. And again, he gives a reasonably detailed account of Hajjaj ibn Yusuf's rule, but of course, no such thing is mentioned here. In the fifth place, viewers, we have Tariq Madina Dimashq, the compendium by Ibn Asakir, and it is the most detailed account. It contains the most detailed account spanning almost 100 pages of Tariq Madina Dimashq, but again, there is no such mention. Then in the sixth place, we have Al-Muntazim of Ibn al-Jawzi, and again, we have a very, very detailed account. But we have such details as the fact that he would read a fourth of the Quran each night. But we do not have any such mention of the fact that he had anything to do in summoning Yahya ibn Yamr or Hassan Basri or Nasr ibn Asim for this task. In the seventh place, we have Al-Kamil fit Tariq by Ibn al-Asir. And Ibn Asir is also given a very detailed account of Hajjaj's rule in Iraq, but again, there's no such mention. And finally, in the eighth place, we have Tehzib al-Kamal by Hafiz Mizzi, who again does not mention anything in his biographical note. Now, viewers, it may be very interesting to note that the first historian to say that al-Hajjaj were responsible for this endeavor is Ibn Khalikan, who died in 681 Hijra. However, his source is the text of Abu Ahmad al-Askari, already referred to above. So it's not that Ibn Khalikan has given any independent source. He himself relies on Abu Ahmad al-Askari's report, already referred to above. And similarly, As-Safadi also refers to this on the basis of Abu Ahmad al-Askari. Again, Abu Ahmad al-Askari's report has also been given above. So, and Ibn Kathir does not say, Ibn Kathir in fact does say that during the days of al-Hajjaj, the Nukat were put on the Masaif, and does not mention any source of this statement. So, although we have to concede that these are the books who do mention Hajjaj's role, but as I said, two of them mention the texts that I've already discussed earlier on, they rely on those texts, and the third does not give any detail in this regard. Now, here's the fifth point of criticism. Now, I'm going to come to the fifth point of criticism. The texts of Hamza ibn Hasan al-Asbahani and the texts of Abu Ahmad al-Askari say that Nasr was the originator of diacritics on similar letters. So this is a step ahead. The previous, we have been discussing that he was one of the people who was responsible of inserting diacritics. Now the question that I'm raising is that these two books, which are the primary texts which report the insertion of diacritics, they actually say that he was the inventor, he was the originator of the diacritics. Now, this is a very, very important piece of information, because if he's the person who had actually invented the Nukat, then this goes against a lot of authentic information, which says that these Nukat were actually the part of the letters when they had been invented. So it is not that the Nukat were later on inserted or invented, as is said, and it was actually Nasr ibn Asim who invented them, but information to the contrary exists that these Nukat were actually present with the letters, together with the letters, at the time that these letters themselves were invented or originated. So I'm now going to cite this, some of these evidences before you. First, let me cite a piece from Ibn Nadim's Al-Fahrist, and this is reported by Ibn Abbas. And the words are, أَوَّلُ مَنْ كَتَبَ الْعَرَبِيَ سَلَاسَ رِجَالْ مِنْ بُولَانْ وَهَيَا قَبِيلَ سَكُنُ الْأَمْبَارِ وَأَنَّهُمْ اِشْتَمَعُوا فَوَزَعُوا حَرُوفًا مُقَطَّعًا وَمَوْصُولًا وَهُمْ مَرَارْ بْنُ مُرَّ وَأَسْلُمْ بْنُ صَدْرَ وَعَامِرْ بْنُ جَدْرَ وَيُقَالْ مَرْوَ وَجَدْرَ. So we have variations in Marwa in their names as well. So فَأَمَّا مَرَامِرْ فَوَزَعَ الصُّوَرِ وَأَمَّا أَسْلَمْ فَفَصْلْ وَوَصَلْ وَأَمَّا عَامِرْ فَفَزَلْ عِجَامْ. The first ones to write Arabic, now remember, this is no other than Ibn Abbas citing this, and Ibn Nadim regarding Ibn Abbas' statement. So the first person to write Arabic were three men from Bulan, which is a tribe that lived at Al-Ambar. They got together and coined the letters, both in their connected and disconnected forms. We know that. This is an element in that you write Arabic discursively, and we have so therefore we have this detail that they had these joined and not joined form in both these forms. So these are, now the text goes on to enumerate these three personalities. So Maramir ibn Murra, Aslam ibn Sidra, and Amir ibn Jadra. But as I said, we have these variations of Marwa and Jadla as well. Now, as for Maramir, he conceived the forms, the sur of the letters. So the way the letters are to be written, he actually conceived the picture or the sur, the way they have to be depicted. Aslam actually was responsible for their separations and linkages, which is mentioned by the words fasl and wasl. And Amir was actually responsible for the ejam or diacritics. Now, Al-Kalkashandi, in his famous book, Subul Asha, says that the diacritics were invented at the time of the letters because it is very unlikely that letters which resemble one another would be left devoid of them. So this is what Al-Kalkashandi has posited, that these diacritics had been invented, or they were there at the time that the letters on which these diacritics are present were founded. Now, Al-Kurdi, Jumu'ah and Hifni also say that they were invented at the time of the letters themselves. Again, Al-Kurdi has mentioned this in his book, Tariq al-Khat al-Arabi, Adabuha, and Ibrahim Jumu'ah in his Qissatu Kitabat al-Arabiya, and Hifni Nasir has done this in his Hayatul Lugha al-Arabiya. So all these are, although relatively people who belong to the modern era, but they again, relying on previous information, perhaps have written this. We have also Salahuddin al-Munajjid and Abdus Sabur al-Shaheen surmised that it was not that Nasr and Yahya originated them because their existence is found in earlier writings. So they also explicitly negate that it is not that they had invented them because writings before them have them present. Now, in this regard, the earliest Arabic document recently deciphered by Healy and Smith corresponding to 267 AD, which is obviously about almost three centuries before even the Prophet was born. They say that this statement or this piece of information or writing which had been discovered and belongs to 267 AD shows dots on Zal, Ra, and Sheen. So these are the three words on which we have diacritics. And they have discovered this piece of writing on which these diacritics were already present. So it would be incorrect to say that it was Nasr who had invented them. Now, Ali ibn Ibrahim Ghaban has translated a very famous article by Robert Hoyland. He has given tracings of the following writings which depict the use of diacritical dots on various letters in the first century. So even before that, even before the previous writing, as I mentioned, which was corresponding to 267 AD. So among them, the following are clearly well before the time dots were allegedly invented by Nasr. I'm now going to just chronologically read out this information before you. And as I said, that this has been given by Robert Hoyland in his work, and this actually has been translated by Ali. This is actually translated by Robert Hoyland. So actually, the article is written by Ali ibn Ibrahim Ghaban. The translation actually is the name of the original text is The Inscription of Zuhair, the oldest Islamic inscription. So this article is actually authored by Ali ibn Ibrahim Ghaban, but translated by as I said, Robert Hoyland. So I'm now going to read out some of the information which has been recorded by Ghaban. So the first of this is that the papyrus of Ahnus, housed in Vienna National Library, belonging to the 22nd Hijra, diacritical dots appear on the letters Sha or Sheen, Za, Dha, Kha, Ja, and Na. So we have letters, in other words, on Sheen, Ze, Zal, Khe, Jim, and Noon. Now, the second evidence in this regard is Zuhair's inscription in Saudi Arabia. Diacritical dots appear on the letters Noon on three occasions, Za on two occasions, and then Za, Ta, Fa, and Sha. So all these have diacritic dots. Then in the third place, we have Al-Khanak Dam inscription near Medina, which the era is between 40 to 60 Hijra. The previous was 24 Hijra, and this is 40 to 60 Hijra. And a diacritical dot appears on the letter Tha. In the fourth place, we have Wadi Sabil inscription near Najran, which belongs to 46 Hijra. A diacritical dot appears on the letter Ba. And then in the fifth place, viewers, we have Marvia Dam inscription near Taif, which belongs to 58 Hijra. Now, diacritical dots appear on the letters Ba on four occasions, Na on four occasions, Ya also on four occasions, Tha on two occasions, and Tha also on two occasions. So this is as far as Ghaban's article is concerned, and if you can look up the article, he has given more details as well. And thus, it is pretty clear that these dots were already present much before Nasr ibn Asim ibn Laysi, as an endeavor has been described. Viewers, I'd also like to quote Sara Zubair Mirza in a recent PhD thesis. She has shown in her dissertation that there is an existence of a diacritical dot on the letter Na occurring twice in the Prophet's letter to Al-Munzir ibn Sawa, who was the governor of Bahrain. We know that the Prophet in the 6th Hijrah is alleged to have written letters to various rulers surrounding Arabia, and one of them is Munzir ibn Sawa of Bahrain. So Mirza, in her PhD dissertation, has shown that there is a diacritical dot on the letter Na, and that occurs twice in that letter. And as such, perhaps this is the first or the earliest occurrence of a diacritical dot on documents discovered so far. So this is perhaps a historical fact. Now, Beatrice Grundler has also pointed out that many, many early texts which had diacritical dots. And I'm now going to present some information which has been recorded by Beatrice Grundler in her famous book. The following clearly shows that this information clearly shows that it was much before Nasr ibn Asim that this had been done. So first we have the Entagian P court number 60. This consists of 13 papyri, and most of them are Entagia, or announcements of taxes owed by a local community. Now, as specified by Beatrice, it is written by Abu Sa'id and dates to 54 Hijrah, and several dots appear on Ba, Ta, Za, and Qaf. Now, this information has been given to us by Beatrice in her famous book, The Development of the Arabic Scripts from the Nabatean Era to the First Islamic Century, according to dated texts. The second information from this that I'll present before you is a tax receipt which belongs to 57 Hijrah. Now, it contains payment of an amount of 108 dinar and 19 qirat for land tax. Diacritics appear on Ba, Na, and some other letters. In the third example in this regard is a receipt for delivery of wheat dated to the second half of the first Islamic century, which is around 643 to 670 Common Era. Now, diacritical dots are visible on Za, Qaf, and Na, or Noon. The fourth example is the letter from Abdulaziz ibn Marwan, the governor of Egypt, from 65 to 85 Hijrah, to the inhabitants of Ihnas or Heraclopolis. So diacritics appear on Za, Ba, Za, and Na. This is in 65 Hijrah, just before Nasr ibn Asim's era. So clearly you can see that these pieces of information show that it was before Nasr ibn Asim's endeavor that these dots were already present in these writings which have been discovered earlier on. Also, viewers, important is the fact that there is some other information that diacritics were invented with the letters, which I'd like to present as corroboratory evidence. So, viewers, in this regard, I'm going to cite another corroboratory text from Khatib Baghdadi's Al-Jamil Akhlaq al-Ravi wa Adab al-Sami', which actually corroborates what already we have seen Mirza and Beatrice Grundler and Ghaban positing, that writings have been found and discovered in which these dots already existed. So I'm going to narrate before you the words of Ubayd ibn Aus al-Ghassani. Kanat Muawiyah, these are the words of Ghassani. Kanat Muawiyah qala haddathani abi qala katabtu bayna yaday Muawiyah kitaban faqala li ya Ubayd urqush kitabak fa'inni katabtu bayna yaday Rasulullah kitaban raqashtuhu qal kult wama raqashta wama raqsha ya Amir al-Mu'minin qala اعطي كل حرف ما ينوبه من النقد. So Ubayd ibn Aus al-Ghassani said, I wrote a letter in the presence of Muawiyah. He said to me, O Ubayd, adorn your letter, because I wrote a letter in the presence of the Messenger of God, which I had adorned, and the words are raqashtuhu. I asked, what does raqshatun mean, O leader of the believers? He replied, give to each letter the dots it deserves. So again, this is a corroboratory evidence. And we know that if this is a letter which had been written, then it was much before the times of Nasr ibn Asim. So the point that is being made here is that Nasr ibn Asim, as has been alleged by by the two earliest texts, that he was the person who had actually invented the diacritics. It clearly shows that that this is against empirical evidence, which is found, and I just cited before you. And this evidence clearly tells us that these dots were already present in the letters when they had been originated. And we also have this corroboratory evidence from Khatib vis-a-vis the fact that these dots were already available and already in use much before Nasr ibn Asim. So viewers, this is a critique on the second phase which I presented before you vis-a-vis the insertion of diacritics on the Mus'haf. Inshallah, in the next episode, I shall discuss my critique on the third phase of which went about on the Mus'haf and which relates to the second vocalization phase. And till then, it is أَقُولُ قَوْلِي هَذَا وَاسْتَغْفِرُ اللَّهَ لِي وَلَكُمْ وَلِسَائِرِ الْمُسْلِمِينَ وَالْمُسْلِمَاتِ.